And now for reading and writing and radio.
I like to be alone. I am quiet. I concentrate on sounds. The birds sing, the crickets call, the frogs croak, the fish splash, the wind blows through the trees.
The author of that poem about being alone was Elspeth Jackson, but it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Here am I, little jumping Joan. When nobody's with me, I'm always alone. Elspeth's poem, which she wrote when she was six, tells how she likes to be alone. The nursery rhyme of Little Jumping Joan is a cheerful, matter-of-fact poem. You get the sense that Jumping Joan doesn't mind being alone either. Often, we like to be alone. We have a need to get off by ourselves, to think, to dream, to fantasize, to reflect, to work something out, to have no relationship except ourselves with ourselves. If you're never alone, you never get to know yourself. And lots of people are afraid of getting to know themselves. They deliberately stay in groups. They deliberately court noise, activity, things to take their minds off being with themselves. I know of a man who is so afraid of being alone with himself that he has 13 radios in his house and 3 TVs, most of which are going all the time. He can't stand solitude. We have a real problem, of course, with getting the solitude that we need these days, because there are so many people around. It is very hard to find a space, outdoors or indoors, where we can go, where we can reflect, where we can think, where we are by ourselves, where there are demands not being made on us, no one telling us what to do, times where we can have that kind of repose. The world is getting so full of people that it's harder and harder to find these kind of spaces, both in environment, the physical world, and in time, to take the kind of time that we need to be alone. But then there's another kind of aloneness. The aloneness when we're alone but don't want to be. Once when Demi was a little girl and we were going off somewhere, she exclaimed to us tearfully, "I'll be all alonely." She was combining the words lonely and alone into a special sort of meaning, and that's why we've always remembered that little phrase. People have always been fascinated by the situation of being all alone. Possibly because it is such a dreadful state if it is carried on beyond what we want, what we need for our solitude. You've undoubtedly read Desert Island Stories. Desert Island Stories are very popular, and the question basically underneath these stories isn't, how does he manage to do everything that needs to be done all by himself? Clothing, shelter, The really basic question is, how does he manage his loneliness? How does he manage to live without any other human beings? Some people go mad on Treasure Island when they arrive at the island where the sailor has been left for several years. He is mad because he has been alone. And certainly solitary confinement is the worst sort of punishment that we can give anybody in this world. There's a beautiful book called The Cay by Theodore Taylor, where a young boy is shipwrecked on an island with an elderly black man from the Caribbean islands. And he finally dies protecting Philip in a hurricane. And for several months, Philip is left all alone on the island. And it describes in that book both his loneliness and how he is able to live even though blind, because the old man had helped him to learn his way around the island to fish and to take care of all his own needs. In the story, The Little Prince, he has come down from his asteroid and he is on the earth in the Sahara Desert, and he is very much alone there in the wastes and emptiness of the sand of the Sahara Desert. And he meets a snake. "I wonder," he said, "whether the stars are set alight in heaven so that one day each one of us may find his own again. Look at my planet. It is right there above us, but how far away it is." "It is beautiful," the snake said. "What has brought you here?" "I have been having some trouble with a flower," said the little prince. "Ah," said the snake. And they were both silent. "Where are the men?" The little prince at last took up the conversation again. "It is a little lonely in the desert." "It is also lonely among men," the snake said. This brings up the whole aspect of being alone with others. Little Jumping Joan says, "When nobody's with me, I'm always alone." And yet we can be alone when we're with other people. Marcy experiences this loneliness among men, among people, in the chapter in the Ghost Boat called Nobody. She wants to be alone. She is tired of playing the same old things with her family and the boy that lives next door on the lake where they spend the summers. And so she goes off and wanders into a Girl Scout camp and discovers that the Girl Scouts take no notice of her. At first, she is pleased. She thinks she's invisible. She tries out various sorts of things, testing her invisibility, and after a while has convinced herself that she really is invisible, that nobody can see her. She goes down to the lake and discovers, when she breaks some rule that the Girl Scouts have about the waterfront, and gets yelled at by one of the counselors, that she is not invisible, that she is very much visible, but has just been ignored by all these people. And this begins to bother her very greatly. She didn't matter. She was just a nobody. "Hey there, don't lean on those canoes." It was that same awful lifeguard again. Marcy jumped forward. She wasn't hurting their old canoes. She stood a careful distance between the canoes and the waterline, scraping a groove in the damp gravel with her big toe. That's all she was to them, just a nobody. But then her wrath shriveled like the fringe of wave suds on the shore by her feet. Before it stretched a bleak ocean of desolation, an ocean filled with emptiness, with grayness, with nothingness, forever and ever. It had been glorious fun to be invisible, but to be nobody. She felt lonelier than she'd ever felt in her life. Tears filled her eyes. Her chin wobbled uncontrollably. She was nobody, and it was a state of horror, of terror. And she stands there, feeling these waves of nothingness washing over her, for how long she doesn't know, until it suddenly occurs to her that she doesn't have to stay there and be nobody, that she can go home. And so she walks stiffly past all the Girl Scouts until she is out of their sight behind some trees, and then she runs pell-mell a quarter of the way around the lake until she gets home and finds her sisters and friends in the water. Betsy looked up. "Oh, there you are. We're trying to have a water ballet, and you're the only one I can do a pinwheel with without getting a snootful. Where'd you disappear to, anyway?" Marcy's whole being flooded with joy. She'd been missed. She was wanted. She wasn't a nobody, not to Betsy. She loved Betsy with her whole heart. What's overtaken Marcy here is a terrible cosmic loneliness. That even surrounded by people, even in a crowd, that she was alone. A moment ago, I corrected little Jumping Joan, saying that you could be alone with others. But I think little Jumping Joan is right, because the situation is that you're really not with somebody. Even though you are surrounded with people, when you are not with somebody, then you are alone. So that Jumping Joan is right. When nobody's with me, I'm always alone, even though there's 10,000 people around me. For instance, have you ever gone into a new school, one that's just bursting with children? Have you discovered that it can be a very lonely place? Cities are often the loneliest of places because there are so many crowds of people. It would be so easy to be with people, and yet we are not with people. Another aspect of loneliness is the awareness of other people's loneliness. Marcy, again, in Pale Faces, is aware of her sister's loneliness. The kids have an Indian tribe, and Janice is a bit too old to join in the fun, and so she gets left out. And as they come back from one of their adventures and hear Janice speaking to them rather wistfully on the dock, and they respond with energy and fun, and then all go trooping up toward the cottage, leaving Janice alone on the dock, Marcy stops. She looked back. "You go on," she said to the others. "I forgot to tell something to Janice." She turned. Janice sat looking out over the lake. A lump of pity swelled in Marcy's throat. Poor Janice. She was so alone. There was nobody her age to play with here. She must get awfully bored, and the tribe never asked her to play anymore. She took a step and then paused. Maybe Janice didn't want company. Sometimes people like to be left by themselves. You could only know by a funny feeling inside yourself, and that wasn't always right. She stood for a long moment watching her sister, and then padded quietly up to the cottage. In Caddy Woodlawn, Caddy becomes aware also of her sister, her little sister, who has been a pest, a tattletale, a tag-along, and Caddy and her brothers usually don't want, always don't want Hetty to be with them. And Caddy is out having a Marcy kind of time in being with herself, thinking, imagining, picking flowers, being out in the fields and in the woods. And she sits up on top of a hill near their home there in early Wisconsin, near the grave of a little sister that she never really knew. It was hard to remember little Mary now. She had come with them from Boston, but she had died so soon and gone to rest on the North Hill. No one missed her now, and it was hard to imagine that she would have been near Hetty's age if she had lived. But sometimes it was nice to come here and sit beside her and put flowers on her grave and so forth and so on. The story goes on. Well, then Caddy sees Hetty come toiling up the hill, her red pigtails bobbing and shining. "Oh, bother," said Caddy. "She's got something to tell." But today Hetty had nothing to tell. She came up quietly and sat down beside Caddy, her round face flushed with the climb. "I saw you up here, and I thought I'd come too," she said. "It's nice up here," said Caddy. "Yes, it is nice," said Hetty. After a while she added, "It's kind of nice to be just us two alone, too, isn't it? Without the boys. But I guess it's more fun for you with the boys." "Oh, I don't know," said Caddy. "Sometimes I get kind of tired of being with the boys all the time. I came off by myself today." "Maybe you'd rather I hadn't come," said Hetty. There was something unexpectedly wistful in her bright eyes. "Why, no," said Caddy. "I think it's nicer since you came, Hetty. I really do." A pleased smile brightened Hetty's face. They sat in silence for a while. But Caddy's mood of vacant daydreaming had passed. Something in Hetty's face had started a whole train of unaccustomed thoughts. She stole occasional glances at the serious round face, turned now across the farm toward the road which wound away in the distance. It was almost as if Caddy had never seen that little face before. Suddenly she understood for the first time that Hetty was all by herself. Minnie was too young, and Tom, Caddy, and Warren had no room in their adventures for a tagging and tattling little sister. Was her eagerness to be the first to tell only her way of trying to make herself important in the eyes of all the selfish older people? If little Mary had lived. And then Hetty breaks in on Caddy's thoughts by seeing the circuit rider come. But there, Caddy is having a realization of her little sister's loneliness. Today, let's write about being alone. Let's explore the two different states, loneliness and solitude. Where do you go when you want to be alone? Indoors? Outdoors? What are your feelings when you want to be alone? Like Elspeth, Marcy, Caddy, do you go for repose, reflection, the joys of doing the things that you want to do? Sometimes do you go in hurt and anger? We often retreat into a hole. Actually, real holes. I had spaces I could squeeze into myself when I needed to weep or to be angry or to nurse a wounded spirit. Where do we go when we're all alone? Probably few of us are on desert islands, but we are often left alone, both by ourselves and in crowds. So how was it when you were at that new school? Or are you lonely in your own school? Sometimes we can be lonely with our friends. A girl from Vermont, Shirley, in fifth grade, sent me this poem. She called it Solitaire. Solitaire, it's not a card game you play. Solitaire, it's a lonely way. A loneliness for love, for care, a loneliness to have to dare. Talk to yourself, call it solitaire. Take a walk by yourself, call it solitaire. It's a loneliness for having friends, a loneliness for meeting ends. That's solitaire, just plain solitaire. And she goes on with the letter to me. I wrote this in a state of depression. It was when I was playing cards by myself. All my friends were mad at me. We had had a big fight that day. Or think about the times that you might have been aware of other people's loneliness, like Marcy of Janice or Caddy of Hetty. Did you try to do anything to help them at that time? Alone, lonely, solitude, solitaire, loneliness. Here am I, little jumping Joan. When nobody's with me, I'm always alone.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.